Klugrum og Palmen er kendt. Vi in our program we are supposed to
I can be even shorter than what you're asking me to say.
When as an accounting officer, you have taken the steps to suspend senior managers, it immediately means that you have initiated the process of discipline. And when you have initiated the process of discipline, like all other matters, it becomes sub judice. Anything that I may say may prejudice the cases against the two regional commissioners, and I would not want to do that, except to give this committee the assurance that the suspension, as I have already publicly indicated, follows in both cases, and although it's separate, follows independent findings against both the regional commissioners. So my action was based on independent reports received. In the first instance, this, unfortunately, there are also further separate incidences involving both these regional commissioners that require further investigation. But is of such a nature that I felt warranted to suspend them for a second time. So if you can do that, I don't know, but I felt it necessary given the substantiveness of both the external reports as well as the subsequent allegations that I have received, and some of these may be connected in some way or the other. What I have been undertaking, I want to give this committee, is firstly that I have instructed that where we have received outside investigation reports, it means that we're able to proceed quite fast in terms of bringing closure to this. And therefore I have requested that we obtain the services of chairpersons, outside chairpersons and initiators in order for the disciplinary process against Mr. Modise to be handled swiftly. In respect of Mr. Gillingham, I have requested through the state attorney that we appoint senior counsel to evaluate the evidence before the SIU in order to determine whether there is a basis for us to proceed as speedily as possible with the disciplinary hearing. So that's the assurance that I want to give this committee, knowing the concern about the cost of suspensions, that I would have to act swiftly. Perhaps in conclusion, just to say, Chairperson, that there are other senior managers also involved, and I have also indicated how I've acted against those senior managers, both in respect of potential transfers, but also further suspensions that may follow. It is a very difficult matter, and I'm quite aware that DCS staff are also really seriously taken aback by the developments. In as far as we a large organization, I do know that when people do not have information, that it creates some sense of uncertainty. I have taken it upon myself to visit the two affected regions on Friday and yesterday respectively, so that I could interact with managers, not about the substance of the case, or not for them to speculate or get themselves involved in something that they do not know, but more just to be with them and to acknowledge that there is pain and confusion and to get us to be focused on the work. And that's been the purpose of my engagement, and to call on everyone to continue to respect our senior managers, because as you know, these are processes that will still have to determine their guilt or otherwise. And I do hope that they will be strengthened, you know, in this process in order to account for the allegations put before me. But that's as much as I can say at this stage. Thank you, Chairman.
Well, thank you
very much, Commissioner. And I want to thank you, Commissioner, on behalf of the committee for this. I know that we will have a further briefing, a detailed briefing, after you have completed this whole thing. But Commissioner, I want to say on this matter that you are having the support. I know I'm talking on behalf of the committee. you have the support of the entire committee. Whenever there is anything that is wrong in the department, you must act. You can't sit and let wrong things run this department. We need somebody like you. We have said it many a time here in this committee that it is not only the foot soldiers that must feel the pain, but also senior members. And you have demonstrated it now. We are not saying that they are guilty of anything for now because they are on suspension. But I really want to tell you that you have our support, full support, 100% or 200% support. Whenever there's something wrong in this department, don't look around. You must act. You are the accounting officer. We will call you. This committee will call you when there's something wrong to say, Commissioner, why is it that the parole board in Groenpunt is not functioning? Because yesterday when you were there with them, I called to say, Commissioner, the acting one, the parole board in Groenpunt is not functioning. We will call you, Commissioner. But everything of the best, Commissioner. Thank you for the briefing. Members, back to our agenda. Our agenda is saying the Laporte letter and the process keys. Now, again, the commissioner wrote a letter, members, and if any one of you wants to comment, you are free. The commissioner, I will read the letter. The commissioner is saying that the commissioner wrote this letter, but maybe I must give the commissioner also 2 minutes to explain why you are feeling that this thing must not be addressed. And the members will communicate. They can comment. Please, Commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. Indeed, I have written a letter to the chairperson. It's been quite difficult. As you know, we've been before this committee on a number of occasions on the matter of the protest and the court incidences. And my one concern was that we were covering the same ground over and over again. And therefore, I fear that we may be viewed as being disrespectful, putting the same information before this committee over and over. That was the one real concern. Of course, the more fundamental issue is that a rule, parliamentary rule in itself, or legal principle that really refers to matters that such a case, as you know, in the case of Fortescue, we do have a civil case against the department, and in as far as information must be put before the committee that we prejudice the state, as a county officer, I really cannot compromise myself in that way. And I must protect the interest of the state until this matter is resolved in court. Because there's no guarantee that in our discussion, information that the parties may use against the state will not emerge. That's as far as Fortescue is concerned. That view has been supported. I've not acted without consultation, and I've consulted state attorney to get clear legal advice, and they've not since sent me that advice, and I'm quite open to give that opinion of state attorney to the portfolio committee. On the matter of the court, similarly, it is a very serious security matter that relates to an escape incident where arrests have been made and people are being brought before the court. And that's clearly a very criminal case where, again, the matter of not only the fact that it's subject to care, but also it's a serious criminal matter that may compromise the investigation and the case of the state against the individuals concerned. And it is for that reason, Chairperson, that I have respectfully requested that we be asked not to present on these two matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Members, there is the case of the Commissioner. Any comment? We agree with the Commissioner. Thank you very much, members, for understanding the difficulty of this matter. Now, Now, one issue that we are going to discuss is a follow-up on medical parole in our prisons. Commissioner Peterson is here. I see and Dr. Mutegi is here. Commissioner Trevor is here from KwaZulu-Natal, and Ntate Munam from Durban Westville prison is here. That is a no-nonsense man, Ntate Munam. I think all the members know you like that. But I saw Mengwena also slipped in. Mengwena, yeah, you are welcome. Yes, I know that you are very busy now. Members, the reason why we have decided to have a follow-up meeting on this medical parole is that, Commissioner, we must find a solution. That is what we feel as a committee. We can't have so many people dying in our prisons, a natural or unnatural. We acknowledge that the number of natural deaths in prisons around the country has decreased from 1,249 at 2006-2007 to 1,050 for 2007-2008. That is the latest report of the church. I'm sure that you have seen it. But it remains a concern, a very serious concern, about this high number of such deaths. And it is our responsibility as this portfolio committee to ask questions to the department and to raise our concerns regarding this matter. We are saying, why are so many prisoners still dying in our prisons when there is legislation that allows them to be placed on medical parole to die, Section 79 the Act is saying that when a doctor has diagnosed this person, then the parole board can apply that. And so I requested a random survey of terminally ill and critically ill inmates to be done. I don't know, did I distribute that thing? You have it, Mrs. President, that list.
It's
good
for you.
Yes, that list. Yes. The study revealed that there are at least 56 inmates across the country who might be eligible for medical parole. I would like to stress that this is not the total number of such inmates. It's few prisons that we have touched, as you can see on that thing. We will also give you copies of this thing. Maybe I must ask Charlene, do you have spare copies for the department as well, so that the department must also have this. Now, the committee can't understand, Commissioner, why it appears as though the committee is passing legislation that the department implement. It is very, very much unacceptable, Commissioner, that every time the department appears before the committee, the department raises challenges around the granting of medical parole. One such challenge relates to relative family refusal to accept their loved ones who are supposed to be released on medical parole. That is what you have said on the 12th of August. On the 12th of August, the committee asked for a list of such families or relatives so that it could also assist by taking this matter to the public, so that the public perception and attitude towards medical parole and parole must change in general. We want to assist the commissioner. That's why we have asked that list, because Mr. Mutseki has said that people, the relatives refuse to take these people. We want to go out. Men Gwena is having a constituency office. Mr. Self is having a constituency. All of us are having. So that we must tell in saying to people, please take these people. It is your relative. It is your family member. But up until today, that list has not come forward. And we don't know why this information is not coming to us. Now, Commissioner, I'm going to raise this issue now here. The Shabir Sheikh issue. I do not wish to single out Mr. Sheikh. We are going to deal with him as part of the many critically ill inmates in prison. I raise his name in this briefing because there's a perception out there that Mr. Sheikh is not part and parcel of the broader prison population. I will repeat, there's a perception out there that Mr. Sheikh is not part and parcel of the broader prison population. But the fact is that he is part of more or less 130 sentenced prisoners in the country. He's part of this 130,000. I do not think that we should discriminate against any of these prisoners and find it very disturbing that while we are free to talk about any other prisoner, it is expected from us not to talk about Mr. Sheikh. It is not correct. It is not correct. It's part and parcel of the 130,000 people, inmates there. We must talk about that issue here in this house. It is reported over and over now for a few months that Mr. Sheikh is in hospital for 6 months now. And that is a serious concern to me as a person, that a person can stay in hospital for 6 months. Honestly, I don't think that those doctors there in what is the hospital? In Nkosi Albert Lithuli. I don't think that those doctors can keep a healthy person there. I don't think so. I think that there must be something very seriously wrong with Mr. Sheikh. But now, nobody can answer that question except the Department of Correctional Services. That's why you are here, to come and brief us, tell us, because it is not, it's It's not, it's, I can't understand. I can't go to Francisco Hospital now yet and put me in if I'm healthy. I'm going to sleep there. And then the doctors will take me. There must be something wrong. But you are here to come and please us. I'm saying let us talk about this matter so that we cut out speculation from outside. You see, each and every person is having his own story, youngers and what and what and what. We must, you see, Section 79 is saying clearly that a doctor, and not Nadim Teto, I mean Nadim Teto, not Commissioner Benny Peterson or Ntate Lunama can decide. Or Ntate Lunzegi, I know that you are a witch doctor there from Christian. You can't throw bones. You can't. You see, it's only a doctor who can determine, and that is what the Act is saying. So you are here to come and tell us, you know, it is not nice for us to see every day in the newspaper things, and we as an oversight committee can't talk about it. We must talk about it here today so that we must have a clear picture what is going on there in Nkosi Albert Lithuli Hospital. But you see, I must also say this, that we must respect the fundamental rights of every human being protected by our constitution. Accordingly, the doctor-patient confidentiality between any prisoner and his medical practitioner cannot be compromised, as all of us here in this room. But I'm very much sure that the department will deal with this issue in a very professional way. It's a very sensitive thing, not only of, I want to stress, not only of Mr. Shabir Sheikh. That's 56. I gave you the document. All of them, let us respect their right as well. But I personally want to know. And if the doctors, Commissioner, I'm sure that you get doctor's report, Commissioner Nshepo is getting doctor's report, please tell us what is the story. You know, it can't happen that we are sitting here for 5 years, our term is finishing now, after 6 months. We can't write a law yet in Parliament, and then the department is not implementing those laws. If this Section 79 is saying that a doctor, after a doctor have diagnosed of a terminally ill disease or condition, then the parole board must consider this person to be placed on medical parole. That is a law that we have passed here in this parliament. Now, Commissioner, over to you.
At the point where we asked to be excused, Honourable Chair. No, it's indeed very complex matter, and so I wish I can run away from it. It's not said in the right part of the way. And I think for that reason I may just be a bit more detailed in my introduction in order to enable us to structure the discussion in a way that will enable us to respond to the request of this committee. But first, Chairperson, just to dispel a few notions. Mr. Mutek has not declared to me that he's a witch doctor. If he does, if he is, he's doing so for hobby. Yes, so he would not be receiving any income from it. So I take that one very seriously.
And I must declare today is my
No, you can see which doctor, whatever kind of doctor. For us also, you've asked whether we have seen some medical reports. We may have seen it, but we still don't know how to interpret it all the time. That's why we're not medical doctors. But more on a serious note, Chairperson, firstly, our apology for not having forwarded to you the list of names of family members who have refused to accept back inmates on medical parole. And the reason is quite simple that we've not kept details of such families in that would have enabled us to give it to you. And it may be something that we ask we do going forward. We were really talking to you about why we have these challenges, and I remember having spoken about the burden of care for poor people who not able to take charge of critically ill inmates. Often these families have jobs and others are not at home, making it extremely difficult for them to do so when the person requires around-the-clock care. And I think this is particularly the case with poor people. So it is quite a serious matter that we have to reflect on. And you will recall, Chairperson, that I also indicated that in such cases we need to find alternatives. And I said to this committee that Judge Bertelsmann specifically was quite keen to talk to me at some point around the issue of halfway houses. I cannot confirm that I've had a meeting with Judge Bertelsmann, who meets with the civil society organizations as part of coordinating the criminal justice processes in Gauteng. I've had such a meeting, and he's linked me up with an organization called LOCHA. It's a network of faith-based organizations, and their main purpose is to find ways of responding to, amongst others, the challenge of halfway houses and accommodation that many inmates are experiencing. So whilst we have these discussions here, we do follow up on some of the undertakings, and some of it does present us with potential solutions. But I think if with your concurrence we can ask that in future we do keep these statistics and the names in the detail to enable the committee to do what it is that you have said you wanted to do. So perhaps having disposed of that, to also just acknowledge the readiness of the committee to accept my explanation around the Fritzky and Lacoste matters. And then to say on the matter of parole and medical parole that indeed we have been before this committee on a number of occasions to deliberate around the challenges that we face as a department in respect of parole broadly, medical parole specifically, and the gaps that we have identified. And I'm ready to continue with that engagement. I have said at the last encounter that we need to, as public servants and as those responsible for driving public policy, keep an open mind on some of these matters, because that's the only way in which we will be able to go forward. And so therefore, indeed, Chairperson, you're right, there are no holy cows. I do accept your explanation that Mr. Shabir Sheikh is indeed an inmate at Durban West Hall, and for that reason we have asked the Area Commissioner for Durban West Hall to be here so that we can respond to some of your questions related to the incarceration of Mr. Sheikh. I want to also concur with you at the same time that whilst we do talk about Mr. Sheikh, we're quite aware that his example or his case merely present to us a challenge that many other people in his circumstances experience, but because it lacks the kind of public profile, it often is not a matter of focus. And so therefore, yet again, this provides us with an opportunity to really engage and to find answers, not in respect necessarily of Mr. Sheikh, but in respect of people confronted with this kind of reality. We do want to remain true to the principle of confidentiality, and as far as that is concerned, we do not want to engage where it is not necessary in the actual medical conditions of Mr. Sheikh, not only for confidentiality purposes, but we may also interpret the diagnosis incorrectly, and we would not want to do that. But we can talk about the impact on us and what it means to the correctional system of cases involving Mr. Sheikh and those in similar circumstances. But perhaps let me start up with a more broader policy context. You will recall our previous engagements. We really struggled around the definitional issues and the fact that the definition in itself may be the impediment that prevents us from using that provision more regularly or on medical parole, because the definition speaks about terminal illness. I think the jury is still out there as to what is terminal. In fact, someone this morning said we're all terminal, we're all in the process of dying. So all inmates can indeed argue that is a very generous interpretation of it. But in putting it as terminal, it raises questions of diagnosis that I can assure you even medical doctors are reluctant to arrive at that conclusion, because life these days, even if it is defined as terminal, and even if you explore, as some of my colleagues have done, the issues of the medical definition of the word terminal, you can begin to see all the confusion around this matter. And so it's not a simple matter. During our engagements with this portfolio committee, you have focused our attention, and indeed you are doing so again, to the ratio of seriously ill patients and the number that we have actually placed out on medical parole. And the number of patients previously we've reflected on who have died of natural causes in relation, again, to the numbers of people placed on medical parole. And so for us involved in public policy, that must remain a concern, because our business is also about humane treatment and the dignity of our inmates. Prisoners have those rights given by our constitution, and we must never lose sight of that. So the problem being definitional, it doesn't mean that we should shy away from pointing out where those gaps are. Our own grappling has shown us that when we have to consider making policy, and when we come back to this house on the basis of whatever discussion we may have, it may be necessary for us to revisit legislation and to see through legislation how we can address some of these policy gaps. And in that respect, when we do present, as Mr. Mutseki will in a few moments, you will see that we're taking it from a more broader view to talk about other jurisdictions and how they deal with this matter of chronically ill patients, people on medical parole, and the challenges it presents to the state. Indeed, the fact that one of the key challenges that we cannot avoid is the cost to the state of continuing to incarcerate someone who requires medical care in a 24-hour cycle. And those people don't need to be terminal, but it is a tremendous cost on the state. And is that the intention? Should the state really be spending that kind of money on someone who has been incarcerated simply in order to execute those sentences, which in many instances can be executed in other ways? I mean, you have community supervision and corrections or house arrest being part of those conditions, and therefore placing the burden of cost on the individual and the families. So there are justifiable reasons why we need to deal with this matter very critically. I need to bring to the attention of this committee two issues. Firstly, that in other jurisdictions, the definition is much broader often than terminal. So we may want to revisit our definition that is currently too restrictive. Secondly, there are also other provisions that enable the state to act in circumstances like this in order to, in taking into account factors such as the cost of the incarceration and keeping down the cost to the state. Both medical parole is used for that purpose, as well as a concept called compassionate parole, and different various provisions provided within the context of compassionate parole. But we really do not need to look at other jurisdictions, Chairperson. I need to remind this committee that actually we had a provision in our own Act, Act 59, Section 69, and I think that was pointed out earlier by some external researchers, and I have asked that we, it's before my time, this section was repealed in 1998. I've asked that we get an explanation of why that section was repealed, and the committee may want to reflect on this. But there was a provision that I think may have enabled us to act in a way that is much more decisive and much more responsive than what the limited definition has allowed us up to now. Of course, I must say, there's always a possibility, the risk in managing it from these angles is also always a possibility of abuse. And when we do come with policy proposals, we need to take into account possible abuse and public opinion, public perceptions. Although, of course, as a committee, whilst we do take cognizance of public perception and public opinion, we can never base our decision-making on that, but on our interpretation of the Constitution and legislation and our mandate. So I just want to refer the committee to Section 69 of the 1995 Act that was repealed in 1998. And that section says, a prisoner serving any sentence in a prison, A, who suffers from a dangerous, infectious, or contagious disease, or B, whose placement on parole is expedient. I want to emphasize, whose placement on parole is expedient on the grounds of his physical condition, or in the case of a woman, advanced pregnancy, may at any time, on the recommendation of the medical officer, be placed on parole by the commissioner. And furthermore, it says, provided that the prisoner sentenced to imprisonment for life shall not be placed on parole without the consent of the minister. In other words, it's before my time, but I'm really sorry that I've not done some research from those with institutional knowledge on why they found it necessary to repeal that action, because there was a provision in our act, and it may have been that that provision was abused. So to come back to the matter of, we'll be talking in general about parole, about medical parole, about chronic illness, terminal illness, and the challenges to the system, and in as far as Mr. Shabir's case is concerned, I think we may want to go beyond that and reflect on some statistics we have for the region in KwaZulu-Natal as a whole that help can give us a clearer picture of the trend with regard to chronically ill patients. I do not, I think that we can debate